Our next case for argument is 21-2163, Hirsch v. United States. Mr. Coulter, please proceed. Am I saying your name right? Coulter? Yes, please proceed.
You did, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Tom Coulter. I represent the appellant, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan R. Hirsch. The focus of Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch's complaint is the Army's failure to exclude from his mandatory retirement date the 3 years that he spent in law school before he was appointed to as a judge advocate in the JAG Corps. The exclusion of his 3 years, we believe, is mandated by 10 U.S.C. 14706, because under subsection A3, Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch satisfies all of the requirements. He obtained his program of advanced education.
So you believe the exclusion is mandated by the statute. That's what you just said, correct?
Yes.
So you believe that that 3 years, whether he wanted it to or not, cannot be counted towards retirement?
Excuse me, Your Honor. It is mandated in the sense that he meets the criteria of subsection A3. And so in that sense, it cannot be counted toward his mandatory retirement date.
So what you do realize that what you're arguing may benefit Mr. Hirsch in that he doesn't want the 3 years while he was in law school but serving in the ready reserve to count towards his retirement age. But you do realize that you are arguing a position that will undermine hundreds of thousands of veterans who seek to have that time count so that they can retire at the 20-year point.
Right. And if they don't apply for the exclusion, then it won't count.
No,
Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch.
No, sir. You've argued to me that the statute mandates the exclusion. There is no longer the ability for a veteran to make a choice of whether to exclude it or not if the statute mandates it.
It does. If they qualify for the exclusion, then it doesn't count toward their retirement.
So you are arguing a position that will undermine hundreds of thousands of servicemen who would like the time that they are serving the ready reserves. Are they not still putting a uniform on during that time?
Yes, they are.
So are they not still receiving military benefits because they're in the ready reserves?
That is correct.
Are they not still called up to service during that time?
That's right.
So they're still serving our country. And yet, under your position, none of those men and women who are serving our country, who are donning a uniform, who are receiving military benefits, should get any credit towards retirement eligibility for that time.
They do get credit. They're certainly getting the credits that you mentioned. They're getting retirement credits, and
according to you, the years they spend will not credit towards their 20 years.
That would be the result of the statute.
And that would be the result of your interpretation that you're proposing of the statute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So while Mr. Hirsch may benefit, lots of military people will not.
And lots of people like Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch will in fact benefit, as will the military.
What is Mr. Hirsch seeking to obtain is a remedy should we interpret the statute as he wishes. He says he was forced to retire at the 30-year point, but that shouldn't have been considered his 30-year point. Because he had only 27 years in, you shouldn't have counted the time he was in law school, despite being in the ready reserves, despite donning a uniform, despite being called up, all of those things. What is the remedy he seeks? Does he want us to reinstate him so he can serve out those final 3 years?
No, Your Honor. He would like the benefit of the monetary value of the 3 years.
So he wants us to pay him for the 3 years now that he didn't serve.
That he was prevented from serving, that's right, while he got an advanced degree to benefit the military.
In many government instances, you're not asking me to pay him for the time while he got an advanced degree. While he got an advanced degree, he was paid in the ready reserves for the time he served, correct?
He was paid at that level, that's right.
What you're asking for is 3 extra years at the end of his service where he didn't work.
That's right.
You would like him to be paid for.
Yes, because he earned that under the statute. He is entitled to serve 3 more years. He was willing to serve 3 more years. The military cut him off before his full service.
But in many instances, for example, in employment scenarios, reinstatement is an option. Is your client interested in a potential remedy of reinstatement where he would be able to serve the additional 3 years?
He'd be happy to have reinstatement, Your Honor. In fact, he's serving right now in the military. He still continues to serve in a different role, just not as a judge advocate general.
Is the issue here not whether he gets credit for that service, but whether that enables him to be forced out because he's not promoted after a certain period.
And that is the proper, I think, Your Honor, respectfully, that's the proper context in which to view this, is that he was promoted to captain. He was, in his view, shorted 3 years of his service as a captain because the military counted against him the 3 years when he was in law school.
So it's not a question of credit, it's a question of when you're forced out.
That is the mandatory retirement date. That's exactly right, Your Honor.
To be clear, what you're asking us to do is to interpret a statute that is only directed to credit and has nothing to do with when you're forced out. Isn't that right?
No.
The result of what you're talking about is when you're forced out. But the statute that you're asking us to interpret is whether or not he gets credit for that service.
Well, it is whether he gets credit, but it is geared toward determining what is his mandatory retirement date.
Where does it say that in 14706?
It's the computation of total years of service, and that is the purpose of it, is to determine under 14507.
It's the result of the calculation, but the purpose of this statutory section has nothing to do with retirement per se, and rather only to do with credit toward service.
Right, and under 14507, which determines when you can, when your time runs under
so
your particular
right
status.
Now, under the existing status of this statute, as interpreted by the military, he has the option, does he not, of choosing whether to count the service or not. He's provided with a form in which he could fill it out, and he could have elected not to count the service when he went to law school. Is that correct?
Could he have elected to do that? Yes, he could have. I don't think that's right, Your Honor. Actually, I think he had to get permission from his commanding officer to attend law school. And once he did that...
Yes, but there was a form. It's two pages
right.
in length.
That's right.
In the appendix. He could have filled out that form and sought to have the 3 years while he was in law school not credited towards retirement purposes for military service. Is that or is that not correct? Does that form allow him to make that election?
I don't think it allows him to make that election under the statute when you're counting...
Where's the form in the record?
It's DA 3725, and it is in the appendix. It's one of the forms that the Board of Contract, the Army Board for the Correction of Military Records relied on in its last ruling in June of 2020, and it says essentially that Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch was in a student status during that time, and under that student status, he was eligible for the exclusion from years of service in terms of mandatory retirement date under 14706.
Okay, why don't A3. We turn to page 1004 of the appendix, which I think on is it 1004? Exactly. Rebecca. Is it 1004?
Yeah,
towards the bottom. Towards the bottom. Thank you.
Sure.
What section?
At the bottom.
Yeah. So does this or does this not give him the ability to submit a form that would allow him to delay his time in postgraduate study, i.e. law school, so that it would not count towards his retirement?
Right. This form, which was not, let's see, March of 1986. That's under the ROTC program, Your Honor, I think is where you're looking on Appendix 1004, and he is not seeking the credit or the exclusion from credit under the ROTC program. And in fact, that is the problem with the government's interpretation, is that the government would limit this statute only to those who serve in the ROTC program. But the way the government has interpreted this, any initial service prior to attending law school in Judge Hirsch's, in Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch's instance, would exclude you from the benefits of this mandatory, of the exclusion of the 3 years from mandatory retirement.
That's not how I understand the board to have interpreted it. Why don't we look at JA 122, which is the board's interpretation of educational delay, paragraph 6 in particular. I think it suggests that he could have submitted DA form 571, and that would have allowed him to delay his periods of service such that he would not have gotten credit.
Yes, and I believe the board cited something that at the time the educational delay standard was not in effect for Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch, and that's one of the reasons why he did not apply for that educational delay. Nevertheless, he filled out the form, DA-3725, that's in the appendix, that allows him to reference his status as student status. His commanding officer was aware of his status. He attended law school, and he qualifies under A3 and B of the statute. So whether or not there was an educational delay is somewhat irrelevant to Lieutenant Hirsch's case. It may apply in other instances. But the question is whether he met the requirements of the statute.
My problem is you want me to interpret the statute in a way for Mr. Hirsch that is going to hurt lots of other veterans. He wants 3 years of additional pay for a period he didn't work because he was prevented from working. But there are many veterans who go in, who serve in the ready reserves while obtaining a degree, and they want that time to mm-hmm. count towards retirement because at the 20-year point, after serving our country for 20 years, they can get out with a pension. You'll have me interpret this statute in a way that prevents them from ever getting that credit.
Yes, because if you get the benefit of 3 years of additional education, essentially funded by the military, yes, the military would like you to serve those extra 3 years so the military gets the benefit of the education it paid for. I don't think that's so remarkable, Your Honor.
Just to be clear, when you say the military would like this, are you here today representing the military, or do you have any document or evidence that this is how the military would like this to be treated?
Yes, the congressional purpose was to extend the years of service after you obtain your professional degree. That's
where?
Exactly what the Congress said.
Where?
That is in the congressional statute. The purpose was to permit reserve officers to serve several more years before facing mandatory separation based on years of service. That's at Appendix 185. That's the Senate report and the House report. Both said the same thing.
But under your reading, if I'm understanding your answers to Chief Judge Moore, it's not to permit. You're mandating, under the reading you would have us make, would mandate that someone in the reserves who independently, not on military orders, chooses to further their education cannot get the credit while they're in school towards their mandatory retirement date, even if they want it. That is, you're, I think, being clear, that's the implication.
That is what the statute requires because of the purpose, which is to, if you have the benefit of the additional educational years and you have an increased status as a professional serving in the military, the military wants the other 3 years.
The purpose is to permit
right.
the military maybe to want to keep that person longer or for the veteran to want to serve longer.
Right.
But you're not really talking about permit. You're saying we would be mandating that you get no credit for those years of service.
Most of the time, if you're applying for an educational delay, you would be applying for an educational delay, right? And so that is some discretionary situation. In Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch's case, he didn't have an educational delay under the specific program because it wasn't available to him. So he is serving in law school, and he is under the statute entitled to the 3 more years of mandatory service.
At the end of the day, this is about statute.
It is.
I understand both sides have said the statute is unambiguous. What would we do if we think it's actually ambiguous?
If it's ambiguous, I think you would look to typical methods of statutory construction. First of all, what does the plain language mean? Which interpretation utilizes all of the words of the statute? What is the context of the statute? It is designed to allow those who get the benefit of a military professional education to extend their service so that the military benefits from that service, as does the uniformed personnel who obtain that professional degree and are allowed to serve for 3 more years after they've been promoted to a certain position.
Aren't they allowed to do that now by filling out this form? You said the form may not have been available to Mr. Hirsch.
Right.
But now they have the ability to do that, correct?
They don't have the ability under the government's interpretation, which would be if you had initial service, and this would be for anyone other than the ROTC cadets, anybody else, if you have any initial service, according to the government, you cannot get any additional time served once you've been promoted to a certain position in the military, because your years aren't excluded.
I thought that, and I may be wrong, I thought that the government suggested in its brief, and I'll find out from them in a second, of course, that there was, he had the option of filling out a form, and that servicemen have the option of filling out this educational delay form,
right,
and electing not to have it count. So am I mistaken in the fact that that's what they argued? I mean, I'll ask them, it's their argument, not yours. What do you understand their argument to be?
That even though Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch, in his instance, obtained this educational degree and qualifies under the statute and believes that it allows him to serve the extra 3 years, that the government says because he had initial service prior to going to law school, that he is ineligible for the benefit, in his case, of serving the extra 3 years.
Even if he had been able to and filled out this form that exists that allows you to elect not to have the service count, do you believe the government's view basically makes that form, which exists currently, illegal and wrong?
Well, it makes the form such that if, yes, in the sense that the government's interpretation would say, if the person filling out that form had service prior to going to law school in this instance, yes, they can't qualify. So they can fill out the form all they want, but under the government's interpretation, they can't qualify unless they're a ROTC. And this statute clearly is not limited to the ROTCs, and so the government's interpretation cannot be the right one. Thank you. I see my time is out, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Colonel Hirsch was commissioned as a second lieutenant in May 1988. And then prior to starting law school in 1992, he served in various military statuses as a transportation officer, including active duty.
We don't need the facts.
So, essentially, the trial court found that the prior service as a transportation officer, as a commissioned officer in a transportation corps, under 14706B, precluded by the plain meaning of the statute, Colonel Hirsch from invoking that statute to exclude those 3 years, and the points made by the court are correct.
Okay, when you say precluded, this causes me concern. Am I mistaken in my understanding that there currently exists a form that allows servicemen to choose or elect whether time spent in an advanced degree, like Mr. Hirsch's? Am I wrong in understanding that right now they have the ability to choose whether that service, as long as they're continuing in the ready reserve during their school, counts or doesn't count towards retirement?
Your Honor, that was not an argument that we briefed during this appeal, so I think there may be a little confusion about this, so I can't really answer that. It's something we can look into. I think that form was I think that was more of a notice issue. I think one of the arguments Colonel Hirsch made was that they knew he was in school. So our argument and what the court discussed was the plain meaning of the statute, and that's as far as we got in this case. However, I do want to point out that to say that the legislative history on page 185 of the joint appendix its purpose was to extend by several years the service of
counsel on page 8. Can you get your brief? Turn to page 8 of your brief, please.
Yes.
Page 8 of your brief.
Yes.
You there with me?
Yes.
Do you see where you say the board also found that even if Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch's DA Form 3725 mentioned above had recorded his student status, this would not require the exclusion of Lieutenant Hirsch's service while attending law school when the Army calculated his mandatory removal date? I guess what I'm trying to understand, I will tell you quite frankly, I think this statute is a hot mess. I think it could go either way on its interpretation. And so what I'm trying to understand is what would be the consequences of each of the separately argued interpretations. You heard me and my exchange with Mr. Coulter, and my concern there was his client may have wanted an extra 3 years to continue serving and have it not counted. But it's my understanding that many servicemen want to hit that 20-year point, and they want this kind of service while they're in the Ready Reserve to be counted. And so I'm trying to understand, does this statute says it has to go 100% one way or the other? Under Mr. Coulter's view, his client's view, Mr. Hirsch's view, the statute would prevent it from ever counting for any of the military folks. Under the government's interpretation, i.e. the board's interpretation that you're defending, does it require it to be counted for every one of these people?
In circumstances like this, somebody went to college, such as Colonel Hirsch did, as a ROTC officer, and then went to law school, and then did not serve as a transportation officer in law school, went directly, as many people do. They go from college, then they don't take time off, then they go to law school, and had an affiliation with the military, and went on one of these programs directly to law school, then that time would not count toward the 28 years had he retired 28 years later as a lieutenant colonel. And that's what the statute says.
But you're suggesting if he had no affiliation during that schooling period. Is that what I understood?
No, because the if we go to page 185, just this is the statutory history upon which counsel is relying. 185 of the appendix states exclusion of period of pursuit of professional education from computation of years of service for reserve officers, actually read in full, states the committee recommends a provision that would not include years spent in a college student commissioning service status in the computation of years of service for a reserve officer. Counsel did not include that. I mean, that's a college student commissioning service status.
Mr. Schroeder?
Meaning, yes.
This case, it seems to me, is a question of reconciling A3 with B. The trial court decided the case based on its analysis of B. We haven't really talked about B. B seems to me to be quite ambiguous, and why should an ambiguous provision such as that nullify the very specific A3 provision?
Well, we would respectfully, Your Honor, B essentially it clarifies what the exclusion is. And the exclusion under B is that if you previously served on active duty or participate as a member of the Ready Reserve in other than a student status for the period of service preceding the member's service in a student status before you go to law school, you were a member of the Ready Reserve or on active duty. That's what Colonel Hirsch was. He served as a transportation officer before going to law school. Then you can't get an exclusion.
The period of service preceding service in a student status was his work in the transportation group, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so that is not excluded.
Well, that's Colonel Hirsch's interpretation, but that's not what this is excluding. What this is saying, the exclusion under A3 doesn't apply. Well, the only exclusion they're talking about under A3, if the, to the extent that it applies, deals with when you're in law school in this particular case, or medical school, or whatever other school you're in. So there's no need, when somebody's on active duty or an IRR, and that's always going to count.
So
by going to law school.
So you're saying B is an express negation of A3.
Well, it's expressly stating that, yes, it's expressly stating that to the extent A3 applies for somebody in medical school, somebody in law school, it doesn't apply if you've already been in the military as a commissioned officer on active duty or in the individual ready reserve. This is not for somebody who's in the military and decides on their own, we're going to go to law school and independently pursues law school. It's commendable, but you're on your own when you do that. You know, it's consistent with the way the government generally works, is that generally in government you can't do things on your own and change your status. You would have to, you know, apply for something and get approval for something in order to change your status with the government. You can't just do it on your own, and this, and the statute is consistent with that and makes sense and is generally the way the government operates. And what it's saying is, you know, you went on your own and you, and by the way, during that time he was paid, the court found, accruing points toward retirement and drilling. So he was still, in a sense, working as an individual ready reserve for the Army.
And would those things have not happened? Would he have not gotten those benefits had he sought educational delay and been approved for it?
Well, that's a possible, I don't know what he would have had to do, but if he was, then he would have essentially not been in, so he certainly wouldn't have been in the status as a member of the ready reserve or active duty. So it's possible. That's beyond the scope.
That's fine. Let me, I have another question for you though. The board decision references a December 15th, 2000 memo. For example, it's page A147. I don't believe we have the memo.
Yes, it's not in the record. Okay. I have it here, but it's not in.
Apparently, this memo supports your position. It says someone in Hirsch's position who attends law school independently, not on military orders, is not on student status and therefore does not qualify for the A3 exclusion. Is that what that memo says? Can we consider that memo? Are you asking us to defer to it?
No, well, because this was decided on the plain meaning, we're not asking the court to defer because we believe the trial court got it correctly on the plain meaning of the statute, but also, I have the memo, but I don't believe it had the analysis of the A3 and B. It just kind of declared, if the court would like, we can submit it into the record.
But what it declares is your is the position. It's consistent with the position you're advocating today, but it doesn't analyze how the statute would support that position.
Well, it has some analysis, but it doesn't do the kind of analysis done by the trial court. So,
Just to be clear, was it in the record below? It was mentioned in the board's opinion. That would suggest to me that it was probably a memo.
Yes.
So when you said it wasn't in the record, you weren't speaking correctly. It is in the record. It just wasn't in the appendix.
Yes. I apologize. You know, I see there are Bates numbers on it, so my assumption was in the record below. It's not in the appendix of this court. And
is it your view that if we don't agree with you that the statute is unambiguous, would that document help us understand whether there is a considered, deliberate interpretation that has been propagated by the governmental entity charged with construing the statute, or is it not helpful to that end?
I think it would be helpful, but it was shortly after the time of the statute, 2000, so it could be helpful because we were defending on the trial court's decision that the statute was unambiguous. We haven't really addressed that, but there are some other interpretations throughout the record below, and also the statutory history. I think counsel mentioned that, so the court would rely on the other typical tools of statutory construction at that point.
You write in your brief that Mr. Hirsch's interpretation of subsection B is actually contrary to the language of the statute itself. Can you help me understand how is what he is arguing for, which essentially, as I understand it, is that B clarifies that the calculation of his mandatory retirement date doesn't restart at zero. He's still got the 4 years before law school counting towards the MRD. What is it about that interpretation of his that is actually contrary to the language of B?
Well, because the trial court went through an entire grammatical analysis of it on page, starting page 11, but essentially what Colonel Hirsch is saying is that it applies to the period before going to law school, but the statute clearly is only discussing the period during law school, and it's illogical to argue that Congress intended to exclude that somebody who served 4 years prior to going to law school suddenly would lose those 4 years of credit just because they went to law school.
I didn't understand him to ever argue that.
You
think that he argued that the time in active duty prior to going to law school should also be excluded from his?
No, Your Honor. If I misstated, what Colonel Hirsch was arguing was that the statute B was for the purpose of making clear that that time was not excluded, but nothing about A3 even implied that that time would be excluded. So didn't make sense to have an exception to A3 to a rule that A3 was not attempting to address. The time period in A3 was during school, so why would they need an exception dealing with the period prior to school?
Oh, yeah, please.
What about the circumstance of one studying to become a chaplain? That came up, I guess, only at the motion for reconsideration. It seems to me that everyone was agreeing that someone in Mr. Hirsch's position gone for 6 years to study to be a chaplain, that he would get the benefit of excluding those 6 years, but that somehow it's different because he was going to law school.
Well, I think there was what the court found was that the issue of being a chaplain was not before the court, that this was a regulation, and the court could not entertain a question about the legality of a regulation. It was not by a proper party before the court.
If we adopt the interpretation of the statute that you're pressing, would it have an impact on those who want to study to become a chaplain?
Well, that's a question of the regulation. It's possible, but I take it from what I've read that in here that there's a shortage of chaplains in the military. And there were regulations issued for chaplains, and whether the military has the authority to issue regulations to make exemptions or to...
How in the world do you think the military has the authority to issue a regulation that would directly contradict the interpretation of a congressional statute that you want us to adopt?
I'm not saying that. And the court addressed that and said if there was a conflict, of course the statute would take precedence. However, there could be other statutes that could be the authority for it. If there's a conflict between a direct statute that addresses it and a regulation, the statute takes precedence. It has to. But that's not the case before the court, and we can't allow a possible future case to affect the meaning of this.
Yes, but what we can allow is a regulation adopted by the agency to express its view of how the statute should be interpreted, right?
Unless, not if the plain language, if the plain language of the statute is clear, which it is, according to the trial court, and we think the trial court is correct, then there's no need, and it would be incorrect to defer to a regulation.
With the indulgence of my colleagues, I just need an answer to the question. I think I came in here with a fundamental misunderstanding. I think I came in here with the belief that if I were to adopt Mr. Hirsch's position, no military men could ever get credit for this service. If I were to adopt the government's position, military people could choose whether to get credit for this service or not based on this form. Am I misunderstanding that? Because I think now, I think I came in with a fundamental misunderstanding. I think if I understand your argument today, the way it works is under Mr. Hirsch's interpretation, nobody ever gets credit for this time. And under your interpretation, people always get credit for this time. They can't opt out of getting that credit. Is that correct?
That's my understanding of the statute. Now, again, we weren't focused on that form. However, according to the statute, A3 sets forth, for example, service as a warrant officer, to make things simpler, in the first part of A1.
Okay, thank you. You've answered my question. Anything further? No? Thank you. We allowed Mr. Coulter, we allowed Mr. Schroeder to go over by a minute and a half. If you have more stuff that you want to say, you definitely get extra time. So,
if I could, Your Honor, very briefly.
Well, you got to come over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll be at the podium. And
I'm sorry.
I think I kind of owe you an apology. I came in with a fundamental misunderstanding. I thought the government's position let military folks choose one way or the other, and your position was taking a pretty hard-line posture. I still don't necessarily love the outcome of your position, but I apologize to the extent I misunderstood the impact of the two positions.
And Your Honor, I apologize. I'm not sure I explained it very well. It was a question that caught me, frankly, a little off guard because, and I want to make sure the court is aware of this, the 3 extra years in law school for any military personnel who are under the benefit of 14706, they're getting the retirement years credit. So they are getting the credit from the military's perspective of staying with their class. The only aspect of 14706 that it affects is whether those folks, having maintained their class rank, can continue to serve for 3 more years because they are in a professional degree program that they weren't allowed to serve earlier. So there is no penalty under 14706. There's no penalty.
I don't think that's exactly right. I think that what the statute will do will force those 3 years to not count for everyone, which means that when someone's looking to hit that 20-year mark, they don't get to count those 3 years.
And respectfully, Your Honor, that is just fundamentally incorrect. They are getting the retirement years credit.
How?
It's a different standard. This is the military. We're talking about retirement years versus mandatory service. Right, so the benefit of 14706 is for those who were cut off in terms of wanting to serve 3 more years, but their retirement status is the same.
This issue wasn't briefed, was it?
This specific issue, Your Honor, was not briefed, but it is not 14706 does not impose a penalty on anyone. You're still getting, you can retire at 20 years, whether you've served 20 or you've served 17 and 3 years in law school. You can still retire at 20 years with 20 years credit, but you can also serve the extra 3 years as a professional based on this statute. That's all this statute does, is allow you to serve the extra 3 years. So I'm sorry if that wasn't clear, Your Honor. And I don't want to take up any more time, but clearly the government's interpretation of the statute just doesn't work because it would have to be limited to ROTC cadets, and it is clearly not limited to ROTC cadets, by example of the chaplains program and many other excess leave programs that the military has in place that would be impacted.
Slow down. You're going so fast, I can't even process you.
Sorry.
Take a breath. Slow down. We'll give you as much time as you need to get through it.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Keep going.
So the statute, the government's interpretation would impact these other programs, such as the chaplains program. They are an interpretation by the Army of 14706, in the sense that if you are a chaplain candidate, the regulation specifically says you can exclude those 3 years from your service. You can exclude the 3 years as counting toward your mandatory retirement date, so that when you serve as a chaplain, the military has the full benefit of your tenure in whatever rank you have as chaplain. Under the government's interpretation, under A3 and B, as Judge Lori pointed out, you have essentially conflated the two, and B becomes completely superfluous because the government focuses on initial service as the trigger. Anyone with initial service doesn't qualify under the terms of A3, according to the government. They also don't qualify under B for the exact same reason. If you read the government's brief, they have said the exact same reasoning as to why A3 doesn't apply to Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch and as to why B doesn't apply to Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch. And unfortunately, the Court of Federal Claims judge's interpretation just doesn't account for the language. He's focused on officers being excluded when the statute clearly is focused on service, the types of service that are excluded. And to get to the court's result and to get to the government's result, you essentially have to ignore language. You have to ignore subsection B entirely, according to the government. And within B, you have to ignore for the period of service, which is the last phrase that Congress added, which we believe was there to clarify in this new provision that it added, A3 and B, that when you exclude term service under A3, that it is only for the period of service while you are in an advanced educational program. And so we think the statute, as we have construed it, makes sense as a whole, uses all of the language, and comports with the congressional intent of allowing these men and women who have gotten a professional degree to serve their country for a further period of time without penalty, because they can retire at the same number of years that they had, whether they use the statute or not. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Foster. Thank you for helping me better understand this process. I think both counsel and this case is taken under submission.